Welcome on in, ladies and gentlemen. It is the Falcons flyover as we begin yet another season here in Atlanta. I am Chris Thomas, Turtle. I'll be with you each and every week here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game as we react to the games and take your calls. The number to get involved is 404-726-0929. I couldn't be more ecstatic to begin my first season as the captain and steward of the Falcons flyover, and I am so excited to talk with each and every one of you. I have Garrett Chapman with me tonight. He will be a part of a rotating cast of excellent executive producers for this program to guide you through the season. Now, there's no easy way to do this, right? By now, I'm sure at least the overwhelming majority of the audience has been informed of what occurred tonight in the fourth quarter of the game. A tragic and scary and brutal and whatever word you want to use to describe it scene occurred at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. And instead of coming on here and talking about all of the great things we saw, particularly on defense, which we will get to, but obviously we need to start with what happened in the fourth quarter. Maurice Norris, the defensive back for the Lions, was hit in the head and neck area on a run by the Atlanta Falcons and was immediately down on the ground in that unfortunate prone position we've seen with the likes of Tua Tagovailoa and others in the NFL, where immediately everyone goes, oh no, oh my goodness, what is happening on the field right now? And it turns out that he had to be not only stretchered off the field, but taken out in an ambulance. So he had to leave the stadium, was immediately taken to a local hospital where he was joined by his mother and others. And we had to wait a long time to get an update on what happened to Maurice Norris. But thankfully, literally as I'm just coming on the air here, the Detroit Lions have provided this update. Maurice Norris is in stable condition and has feeling and movement in all his extremities. He will remain at Grady Memorial Hospital in Atlanta overnight for observation. We would like to thank the Atlanta Falcons organization, the EMS team at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, and the doctors and staff at Grady for their support. So I think all things considered, that's as good of an update as you're going to get on Maurice Norris. And the entire NFL world turned to Mercedes-Benz Stadium earlier this evening to give their thoughts and prayers. And the Falcons and Panthers, I'm looking at the Browns and Panthers score right here. The Falcons and the Lions did something unprecedented tonight, which was collectively they decided that it was in the best interest of both football teams to suspend the game where it was about a few minutes into the fourth quarter. So you got something that was such a display of humanity and of righteousness and of brotherhood at the darkest of hours. As they watched helplessly as one of their brothers, which is what they are, have to be taken away in an ambulance. And they said, you know what? That's enough for today. We got our work in. We got everything done that we needed to do. And we are going to just call this one. And it was a chilling scene. It was an eerie scene as they gathered at the line of scrimmage. Emory Jones was in at quarterback for the Falcons. He hikes the ball and proceeds to just hold it in his hands. And for the first few seconds to a minute or so, nobody knew what was going on. Nobody knew what exactly the plan was. The clock was just tick, 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 and there was no movement. There were no timeouts being called. There was nothing. There was just silence, and there was just the Falcons and the Lions were just staring at each other across the line of scrimmage. And then about a minute later, they formed a prayer circle, stood in silence with each other, held arms, And a minute or two after that, the NFL called down and said, suspend the game. And that is exactly what they did. So tonight is a night that we'll certainly be remembering for a long time. It's a reminder of just how fragile the game is and just how, you know, you joke around about should Penix play or, you know, should Kirk Cousins play. And, you know, that's all fun and well. But then you see something like what happens tonight and you're just, you're honestly kind of put in a little bit of a state of shock. And I know I was just sitting there watching it. It looked like shades of Damar Hamlin all over again. And it was just scary, scary stuff. So, again, this is the Falcons Flyover. I am Chris Thomas. I am pumped to be here for this season with you. After every single game, we will be taking your calls. We'll be taking your calls tonight at 404-726-0929. But obviously, this unprecedented situation just has to be, you know, where our minds are at least to start the proceedings tonight, because it's never happened before. Just quite frankly and bluntly, it hasn't. To see the teams, the coaching staffs collectively come together and just say, you know, enough. This is not that big of a deal. This is not that important. This is not something that takes precedent over the potential life and death situation that one of our brothers are dealing with. So I just think that what it comes down to ultimately is you have to commend the Falcons. You have to commend the Lions. You have to commend the refs. You have to commend the league for everybody getting together and not putting, you know, something like fourth quarter hot dog sales, you know, above a situation as dire as what was taking place on the field. And I give them a ton of credit. I give them all the props because these situations are incredibly dicey. They're ever-changing in the moment. You never know what's going to happen on a play-to-play basis. And they were ready. When the time was called for them, everybody to do their part, from the players to the coaches to the medical staff to the league office to the coaches to everybody involved, they did the absolute right thing. And they need to be commended for that. And I am here to do just that tonight, as unfortunately all of the positives from the evening, you know, how good the defense looked, how good some of the pieces on offense looked, the receivers. And again, we will break all that down. But, you know, that gets completely overshadowed by what happened on the field in the fourth quarter. That just gets completely to the back burner. There's no question about it. You have to take all your thoughts about the game and just save them for another day. Or in this case, save them for later in the show, because that's where they belong. I don't, you know, nothing that happened for the Falcons tonight positively is anywhere near as important as that update that the Lions put out again just about 5 minutes ago. Again, I'll read it to you one more time. Maurice Norris is in stable condition and he has feeling and movement in all his extremities. He will remain at Grady Memorial Hospital in Atlanta overnight for observation. We would like to thank the Atlanta Falcons organization, the EMS team at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, and the doctors and staff at Grady for their support. Coming up next, we'll get a perspective from somebody who was in the building. We'll chat with our good friend Allison Mastrangelo of WSB-TV. She was in the building. We're not going to talk about the game. We're not going to talk about the X's and the O's. What we're going to talk about is, you know, what she saw, how she felt the players responded, how she felt the coaches responded, what was the atmosphere and the energy like, how soon did everybody start to realize what was happening and how the stadium and the crowd handled it so well. So we'll welcome Allison Mastrangelo in next of WSB, and then starting at 12:20, we'll take your calls. It is the Falcons Flyover. Again, I am Chris Thomas. I am your steward, and your captain for the 2025 season. Normally, we jump right in and start talking about the X's and O's, but with such a unique, historic event by the showcasing of the players, we needed to start with that tonight. And we'll do just that with Allison Mastrangelo next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Back with you here on the Falcons flyover. It is Chris Thomas Turtle with you until 2 o'clock this morning. We are reacting to, of course, the first preseason game. It's in the books, but certainly not in the conventional sense by any stretch of the imagination. We will get to your calls coming up in about 15 minutes. Just hang tight. I do want to hear your reaction from Falcons fans about what you saw. There was a lot of positives to take away, but right now we need to head out to the WadeFord.com hotline. Welcome in our good friend Allison Mastrangelo. Check her out at WSB TV to recap the events at Mercedes-Benz Stadium tonight. Allison, obviously a horrific scene, but the Lions did provide an update just a couple minutes ago that Maurice Norris is in stable condition, has feeling and movement in all his extremities. He will remain at Grady Hospital in Atlanta overnight for observation. So with that said, good news in hand, but what was it like at the stadium when the injury first occurred? Did you and everybody else around you even realize the severity of the situation at first?
Not at first. I mean, you saw him go down and then, you know, you kind of looked to follow the ball. I didn't really see it until, you know, everyone was around him. And then we started to see the replays on the TV. And then, of course, when the ambulance came out in the field and the players got together, that's when you knew something awful was happening. And it's such a scary moment for everyone there. And I think at the first there was kind of some confusion because we didn't know what was happening, then if the game was still going to be you know, played. But it was such a powerful moment when you saw, you know, the teams get together and pray on the field. It's unlike anything I've ever seen before.
Yeah, and I think the one of the telltales was, unfortunately, it was a procedure to get him in the way that he needed to be transported out of the stadium. Allison, we cover games. We know injuries are an unfortunate part of it. But for just the length of time that the broadcast had to be paused to get the situation sorted out where he was able to be transported out of the stadium was just added a jarring situation to the entire matter.
Yeah, and then, you know, I think it was interesting, you know, we did see briefly, like, Dan Campbell and head coach Raheem Morris talk on the field afterwards, and then they kind of went to their sides, and then, you know, both teams came back on the field. It looked like they were going to play again. Then the Falcons snapped the ball, and then there was some confusion because they, no one was moving. They thought maybe there was something wrong with the clock or something like that, and then you're noticing, like, minutes. I think it was almost like, you know, they had 14:50 left, and then almost like 7 or 8 minutes went by until finally the NFL came out and suspended the game. You know, after the game, I was in the locker room talking with the guys. No one would for sure say, like, who made that decision? Was it Raheem? Was it Dan Campbell? Pretty much all we're being told is, like, that decision was made on the field, and you can take, you know, what you want from that, that that was kind of decided between the teams that they didn't want to play. And every player I spoke with, whether it was DeMarco Helens or Easton Stick, you know, all of them said 100% that that was the right call. Like, they just needed to be with, you know, they needed to pray and they needed to all get back together and focus on what was really important. And that was, of course, Norris and, you know, the major accident that he went through on the field. No one at all, none of the players felt like they needed to play, and they didn't. And I think, you know, that was the right call. At the end of the day, it's a preseason game. It's safety. It's life. All of that is so much more important than a game that doesn't even, you know, count for the record books or anything like that. So, you know, interesting because I think that's the first time I have ever seen players, teams kind of make that decision, you know, on their own. But at the end of the day, it's player safety is the most important thing, right? And they wanted to make sure that was known.
Well, the other interesting thing about it was Raheem Morris. I know when he spoke with our very own Dave Archer, he didn't want to talk about football at all. When he met with the assembled media, he didn't want to talk about football at all. So not only was that approach taken on the field, but then, Allison, as you said, it was continued on by Raheem Morris leading the charge on the Falcons side, Dan Campbell on the Lions side of making sure that the messaging was all about what it needed to be and not about the game that took place.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that was probably the shortest press conference of Raheem Morris. I think it was like almost 4 minutes long, and he just wanted to focus on, you know, like you said, what happened, and kind of just talking about, like, briefly praying, you know, getting the guys together and things like that. He didn't want to talk about the game at all. I do know a reporter from Detroit shared with me that Dan Campbell did say that he had a lot of respect for Raheem Morris. And so I think that can lead you on to believe that they had a great conversation about what, you know, they talked about, and he called him a class act as well. And so, you know, I think that that's very important between, there's a lot of respect, I think, with how the situation was handled between both teams when they, you know, I guess mutually decided not to play. I mean, it's unlike anything. I think, like you said, you know, there was confusion before when we were watching it, but, you know, to see them stand up for themselves and for a teammate, whether it's all, no matter what team you're playing for, it all comes down to taking care of one another. I did also see that the Lions locker room was not open for post afterwards, which is understandable, of course. And, you know, we're all just praying for Norris, and now, like you said, there's some positive news at least, but, you know, really just puts things into perspective when you see something like that so scary and sudden happen on the field.
How powerful was it, the image inside the stadium when the players all gathered around each other as the time was expiring on the field, and like you said, an unprecedented showcase of brotherhood and integrity, and, you know, this means more than any individual game. It was shocking to see on TV. How was it inside the building?
Yeah, I mean, it really was kind of silent, right? I think, you know, because everyone was trying to take in what was happening. But then there were also, like, some cheers from the fans when they started to realize what was happening. Like, oh, they're doing this. There was some clapping and things like that. Like, they respected what they were doing. There wasn't, like, you know, any, like, booing or anything or upset that, like, the game was over early. Like, there was, you know, none of that at all, which was really great to see. And it was just really powerful. I mean, you see, like you said, you just see these grown men together on the field all coming together. And I think it was really powerful to see when the ambulance came out and, like, all the Lions players were running onto the field, you know, wanting to see, you know, Norris and pray with him and everything before he was gone. You know, and I just also, you know, you feel for Nathan Carter, you know, with the Falcons. Like, obviously it was an accident. It was nothing that, you know, it was just on a play, right? And that's football, and things happen like that. And so, you know, you feel with him, but, you know, it was just a football play. It wasn't anything dirty or illegal or anything like that. It just happened. And so, you know, you're praying for everyone. And I also saw that, you know, Norris's mom is able to be with him at the hospital. So that must mean that she was here at the game, you know, watching him. And so, she wants to be in there. I also saw, you know, some reports that some of his teammates wanted to stay back with him, as well. They didn't want to fly back. So, you know, just a really great sign of, you know, at the end of the day, what's it all about? Football is a game, but life is way more important.
Yeah, exactly. As we're talking with Allison Mastrangelo, WSB TV, she was inside Mercedes-Benz Stadium tonight for the events that unfolded with, you know, the tragic scene there. That ultimately, as we said, though, Allison, it seems like, you know, about as good of an update as we can get that we're going to have moving forward. You know, and the only thing you can do if you're a Falcons fan is just wish them the best. And I did hear on the broadcast that as he was leaving in the ambulance that he was given a round of applause and a standing ovation. So I think the ultimate takeaway here, Allison, is I think everybody involved, from the fans to the coaches to the players to everybody else that was there tonight, did about as good of a job as they could have done given the circumstances.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think, like, all of us are human beings, and at the end of the day, when something major like that happens and scary like that happens, it's hard to get it out of your head. I mean, I was even like, how, you know, I saw them get back on the field. I was like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe they're going back out on the field and can play after that. Like, I know it's football and they talk about injuries, but something like that, I don't care who you are, it's scary to see. And then imagine being one of the players. You just saw one of your teammates get carted off the field, and now you got to go play in a game that doesn't even matter or count. I mean, even if it did, it's like hard to even imagine, you know, that they would have played that after, you know, the scenes unfolded. So, you know, not one, like, every single person, you know, and player in that on that Falcons team 100% agreed that that was the right thing to do, and that it was more about Norris and praying for him and everyone else than and then playing that game. And it's, you know, it's unlike anything we've ever seen before, and hopefully we never have to see it again. But if, you know, this happens, maybe this is a trend now, you know, that we see, instead of having to like push through something like that, it's like, maybe, all right, let's think about the mental health and the physical health of our players and athletes. Can we go back out there and ask them to put their bodies on the line mentally? Can they do that after they just saw one of their own teammates go down? Like, yeah, I know it's part of the game, but also it's really a hard part of the game, right? That can mess with you. So 100% the right call overall, even in my opinion, I thought that was the right call, because I was kind of like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they're going to play. And so hopefully we just keep getting more positive updates on Norris, and you know, the Falcons can get a nice weekend off, and then they'll get ready for, you know, joint practices coming up against the Titans next week.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to those immensely. All right, before I get you out of here, one positive note. I'm going to assume that before this happened, the crowd was pretty into it, given what the defense was able to do.
Yeah, no, I think they, I mean, obviously the defense was the winner of the game. I think DeMarco Helms was also very impressive. He goes by the nickname Bam Bam, and he definitely showed up and showed out, making some big plays, even though he got a flag or whatever, not a flag, it shouldn't have been a flag, on that one tackle. And I also think, you know, it was nice that we got to see Jalen and James Pierce out there. They were really trying to shut down Pierce, though. I think at times they had double coverage on him. But Jalen was also trying to get out there. So, I mean, they talked about it in the broadcast, that they talked about how this defense, you know, ball is life, and they want to get after the ball. And you also see it. To me, the defense almost looks like a hockey lineup. Like, they're making changes kind of quick, like first down, second. Like, they're not keeping the same guys out. They're rotating them pretty quickly. So this is what you want to see, some life in that defense, something we haven't seen, I feel like, consistently in a long time. And imagine that wasn't even all the veteran guys out there. So to get to see them all out there, so something positive for sure. And hopefully, you know, DeMarco can build off of that and just stay, you know, healthy for the rest of the season, because he certainly needs it, and he certainly wants it, because he talked about after the game, you know, briefly, just how great it felt for him personally to be out there, especially with how things ended last year with his season-ending injury. So positive things to take away for sure. Other than that, you know, you can't really break down too much of the other stuff, because, you know, the run game struggled and things like that. But I mean, consistently, you don't have your starters out there and all that stuff. So I'm not going to get too crazy over that kind of stuff. But definitely the bright spot was the defense. Even my dog Lexi agrees, I guess, with that as well.
Well, we'll be checking Lexi and her sister, correct, out on Instagram and Twitter and the like. And we'll be checking you out on WSB-TV. Appreciate the time. Appreciate you staying up. And next time we'll be talking about all positive Falcon stuff.
Yes, absolutely. You have a good night and stay safe.
All right. Thanks, Allison. Appreciate it as always. All right. When we get back, let's get into the meat of this thing, shall we? We covered the important events of the evening, and I thought, rightfully so, that was the only way to open up the show and dedicate the time needed to the historic events tonight at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. But let's chat. 404-726-0929. How pumped are you about the way the Falcons' defense looked? I'll give you my highlights, my keys. I have copious notes that I took throughout the game, and Garrett will share his as well. Let's get the Falcons flyover really cranking. It is Chris Thomas with you till 2 a.m. on Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. Welcome back into the Falcons flyover. It is Chris Thomas Turtle with you until 2 o'clock this morning, recapping a just a really unfortunate way to get the preseason kicked off for the Atlanta Falcons, with the events involving Maurice Norris and his, I mean, just, it's just one of those freak football plays, right? He's going to make a tackle and one knee goes one way, and unfortunately it winds up right in his face, and he's unable to avoid it. And, you know, it's an inch here, it's an inch there. And unfortunately, that's the game. And he had to be carted off in an ambulance and taken to a hospital. But thankfully, he is staying overnight for observation. And he has his mother with him, and he has his teammates with him. And he's going to be able to hopefully, at the end of the day, come out of this one and hopefully have a nice long NFL career. That's what we're all hoping and praying and wishing for. But obviously could have been a lot worse. But just a brutal, just watching at home, you just feel helpless, right? You're just, you're just sitting there and you're just sitting on your hands waiting for, you know, anything to happen and anything to come about of what the situation was. And it really is a helpless feeling. You're sitting there as a football fan and you never want to see anything like this happen. I don't care what team you root for, what team you love and hate. You never want to see anything like this happen with, you know, any player on the field. I don't care if it's the star quarterback or the last man on the roster. You know, health and safety in this league has been an issue. It's been something that the league is trying to prioritize. But unfortunately, even on a play like this, you can't legislate a play like that out of the game. It was a simple run play. And it just was an unfortunate situation. But thankfully, it sounds like about as good of an update as we can get. We've gotten. And we'll have to remember this one for a long time with a little lump in our throat and a sinking feeling in our chest. But the season is going to have to move on, and we are going to have to get ready for a game against the Titans and some practices that are going to be taking place this week that we'll get into in a little bit. But just an awful way to end what was starting off to be a really, really fun first preseason game for the Falcons. Because let's be honest, folks, that defense, they were getting after it. They were doing their dang thing. And it was an absolute pleasure to watch. Sacks, forced fumbles, fumble recoveries. And the biggest thing is that, because you got to take it with a grain of salt, obviously, it is the preseason. But the thing that I think will translate to the ones, and there were some guys out there, like Arnold Ebiketie played snaps. And I'm like, huh? Interesting. Okay. I thought he was a starter. I don't know. Like, I guess we'll find out what that was about. But you see guys just swarming to the ball. And that stood out to me like a green sore thumb. Because that is something that this defense has, I think, tried to do over the last couple of years and hasn't been so successful at it. There were hats on the ball every play. And if that's the type of ferocity that a Jeff Ulbrich defense is going to be bringing on a week in and week out basis, count me in. That was refreshing to see. Yes, we saw Jalen Walker and James Pierce get in the mix. But there were a couple of guys that stood out that I highlighted that I think had really, really strong performances on the defensive line. Ruka Rororo, who got some action in there. He was making plays. And a guy that's been on this team for a couple of years that has been a productive player at times, but he looked like a game wrecker in this one, was TQ Graham. TQ Graham has been a rotational defensive tackle for the past couple of seasons for the Falcons. He looked like a dude that was ready to burst through the scene. He was coming at you out of your TV. I was really, really impressed with the performance that TQ Graham put on display tonight. Defensive line, just, again, the word I would use is active. They were very active. They didn't always get the quarterback down on the ground, but you got to just try to get there. That's your role. Plug your gap and try to be a disruptor in the backfield. And I thought Ruka Rororo and TQ Graham especially had really strong performances on the defensive line. How about the defense of D. Alford? That's a guy that's another curious case for this Falcons defense. Where does he belong? Is he going to start at nickel? Is he going to be a key special teams contributor? He was very active tonight. He recovered one of the fumbles, and he made a couple of nice plays as well. I don't know where he fits in on this team. He could be a starter, or he could be a very versatile backup. I'm not entirely sure where he fits in. That's another name that you want to watch out for. I mentioned Arnold Ebiketie. He had a sack, and TQ Graham recovered that one. Arnold Ebiketie, his ceiling has been about six and a half sacks every year. Is he going to get over that hump? Is he going to break through? Is he going to have a 10-sack performance this year? He could, especially because he's playing clearly with the most talent around him, right? I mean, duh. I mean, I don't even think that's comparable, especially if Walker and Pierce can do, you know, anything. It's funny, Garrett Chapman, who's producing the show tonight, this stat keeps getting thrown around, and I don't like this stat because this stat need not apply to our two stud rookie rushers. The average sack total for a rookie pass rusher, you know what it is? You know what that number is, G?
It's not good. It's probably like 5.5 or something like that.
No, try less.
Yeah.
4.5.
Yeah, well.
For an average, the average rookie pass rusher season.
Does that go for any rookie pass rusher?
That's rookie pass rushers.
Okay. What about, do you have first round rookie pass rusher?
No, it's rookie pass rushers.
Okay.
The stat that's thrown around, you can look it up. You see it everywhere.
Sure.
4.5 sacks is the number.
Yeah.
That's not enough. Now, from James
now,
Pierce
I don't
Jr.
think I don't think that James Pierce Jr. is somebody who's going to get 4.5 sacks. I'd say that he's probably closer to like a 6.5 or maybe 7. Jalen Walker, I could see probably closer to that number just because
he's going
to
be used.
He's going to be used in different ways. I would assume he's a versatile type of player, but he also is lining up specifically at edge, and that's all he's doing. He didn't do that at Georgia. So there is a little bit more of a learning curve for
at first.
For Jalen
that's what they're saying at so they
I'm
laid,
just talking about right now.
Yeah, they laid out, and I know you know this, but for the audience, they laid out this plan because they were asked right after they drafted Jalen Walker, like, yo, how are you going to use this dude? He's so versatile. And they're like, well, here's the thing. Slow down, Chief. This kid is very smart, but we don't want to overload him. So here's what we're going to do. The plan is we're going to start him on the edge. And then once he gets more comfortable, we're going to move him outside. We're going to move him inside. We're going to move him all around the field and showcase the versatility that he had at Georgia. And that's the plan. And so far, unless I missed something, that plan has not been updated. That is still the plan for Jalen Walker, at least to start the season. He's going to be a guy that's going to focus on getting the QB on the ground, which that's fine with me. Although, I think you could make the argument the linebacker room's a little thin, especially with Troy Anderson. Well, they don't have Troy Anderson, G.
They will. I mean, he's on the PUP list. I mean, he should be ready to go based off of comments from Raheem Morris, who's vague with timelines and things like that, so don't take a lot of it with a grain of salt. But
how much confidence do you have in him to stay healthy?
I'm not going to see him as a starter next year. He's not a starter. I mean,
Divine Diablo is going to start.
Has been fantastic in camp. I mean, the last time I saw, he played really well in the scrimmage, and then on Tuesday he had 6 tackles and 3 tackles for loss. He's all over the field.
And isn't JD Bertrand banged up too?
JD Bertrand wore a yellow penny during everything on Wednesday.
And when did that happen?
I don't know. That's a great question. They don't have to release the information until we get to week 1.
Yeah,
so we don't know.
But the point is that Jalen Walker is not going to be rotating with those guys right away. Maybe by midseason, maybe by, whenever. I was going to say maybe by their bye, but their bye's in freaking week 5. They got so short-sighted with that. Is so unfair, especially because they have to make the international trip.
Yep.
That is really an unfair thing for the Atlanta Falcons.
I think we've gotten close to where you need to have 2 bye weeks in the NFL.
Well, I think once they go to 18 games, you will. You have to.
I mean, they're going
to
go to 18 games, but you have to do a second.
You have to get the second. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to field teams at a certain point if you're playing, 12, 13 games in a row without a bye, which is essentially what the Falcons are going to have to do this year, which is just awful. But the point is that Jalen Walker is going to be shifted in and out of the two different rooms, the linebacker room and the defensive edge rusher room, at some point during the season. But it's not going to be at first. So maybe he'll have a little bit more higher sack total at the beginning of the season than he will at the end, but that remains to be seen. Maybe they don't need him in the linebacker room. Maybe Divine Diablo and Cade Nellis and company hold it down and they don't even need him. But certainly you got your first look at those guys tonight. And I'm really excited about what I saw from the defense. Just the effort, the energy, the flow. The defense had a flow to it. It felt like everybody was lining up where they needed to. Like, guys, simple things that were not happening last year in real games that counted. Proper formations, knowing who you're covering, getting to your spots, swarming the ball carrier. These are things that were just a sight for sore eyes because they were not happening consistently last season. And so much so to the point where you got embarrassed on certain occasions against teams like the Vikings and the Broncos. So I think at the end of the day, you have to be pleased by what you saw from the defense. If you have a thought, give me a call, 404-726-0929. It is the Falcons Flyover with Chris Thomas. Turtle, I'm with you until 2 o'clock. How pumped are you about what you saw from the defense tonight? I am excited because you're going to see that. It's not about the individual playmakers. It's about seeing the swarming, seeing the gang tackling, seeing the proper assignments. That's what's going to translate to the ones and the twos that weren't on the field tonight. And that has me pumped. So we'll take your calls on that. Coming up next, do we have a new backup quarterback? Oh, my. I like what I saw. We'll talk about that next. It is the Falcons Flyover. Chris Thomas, Turtle, with you till 2.
Our second and 8 ball at the 11 after the 2-yard run. Here's Hooker from the pocket.
He
got batted out and recovered by Atlanta. And I think James Pierce, is that the guy that raked it out of there, or Ebukadi?
It looks like Ebukadi.
Ebukadi. Arnold Ebukadi, I saw the rake down on Hendon Hooker. My goodness. Atlanta has forced yet another turnover in this first half.
You absolutely love to see it, as we were just breaking it down in the last segment here. It is the Falcons Flyover with Chris Thomas. Turtle, taking you up until 2 o'clock. We're taking your calls. How excited are you about the Atlanta Falcons defense and the way they look tonight? If this translates into the first team, giddy up. This is going to be something that's a lot of fun and really could be special, in my opinion.
Well, Ebukadi is first team. Ruka Roro will be first team. And that was really the biggest thing. I did a piece on this, a whole write-up. And the energy that you see at Flowery Branch was on display tonight. That's something you can take with a grain of salt. It's a preseason game, and it's not a final product, and it's not Jesse Bates, AJ Terrell, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But a lot of the guys that you're going to see on the defensive line and in that pass rush too, especially in 2025, were out there tonight. Jalen Walker looked really good. DeMarco Hellam stole the show. I mean, my God, what he was able to do, flying all over the field, hitting folks, it's incredible. And Arnold Ebukadi looked active, looked like a guy who has been a leader in sacks on this team for a while. I mean, it's six sacks last year.
You got to be fair, though.
I mean, he looked like the guy who had 5 sacks in the final six games of the season.
If he's a guy that continues to grow, and he has year over year over year, I think he could be a guy that you look up and all of a sudden he goes from six and a half to close to 10.
If he can get you to 10 sacks. Look, and you talked about rookie expectations and how the number is 4.5. I think that's in line with Jalen Walker. I mean, I think James Pierce can elevate and do a little bit more just because he's a pure pass rusher. But you get that from Leonard Floyd, who's 8.5 sacks. I mean, that's what he is for his career. You get 8.5 sacks from Arnold Ebukadi, which I think he can if he can stay healthy for a full 17 games. I think he can get you to that 8.5 to 10 sack range. Caden Ellis is a guy who can get you 5-6 sacks. You're going to pick it up.
Well, I think Caden Ellis could get you more than that. He just hasn't been used. He hasn't been used.
In this attack style of defense, I think they're going to be there's going to be a much bigger
more
emphasis,
opportunities, yeah.
More of an emphasis to go after the pass.
7 the year that he came over from New Orleans.
Yeah.
And he hasn't done that since he got here. Now, I don't think it's because he's dropped off. He's been, outside of Jesse Bates, probably the best defender on the team over the last couple of seasons, but he just hasn't been a pass rusher per se.
Well, it's also because the Jimmy Lake defense
stunk.
It did, but it was a very passive defense. It wasn't one that would be an attack, if you will, to use the term that they've used a lot up there at camp at Flowery Branch. They want to get after folks. They want to attack you. They want to get in and make you react to them, not vice versa. And Jimmy Lake's defense, it was a lot of the inverse of that. It was a lot of reacting and playing back and playing it safe. And they would get dinked and dunked all the way down the field, and it burned them. And I think that they've got some dudes this year. But if you can get to that 40 threshold, I think that's pretty much where they need to be. And if they can get there, you're looking at a potential playoff.
They
team,
hit that a couple of years ago when they had Ryan Nielsen. And then for some reason, they let him go to Jacksonville. They didn't retain him with the regime change. And we saw what happened when they didn't retain him. So I think you're right. I think the biggest thing, though, is this safety room that you were alluding to. There's like 4 or 5 dudes competing for one spot. You have DeMarco Hellams. You have Jordan Fuller. You have Jesse Bates, obviously, is your starter. And then you have Xavier Watts. You have all of those guys that are, who's going to win the job?
Yeah, yeah. And I think,
I don't know.
DeMarco Allen's put on a hell of a show today. Yeah, I got
no. That was incredible. You heard that boomstick through the TV.
You know when you played Madden, like 2000, like the early Maddens, where they just came out with that hit stick, and you just lay somebody out.
Yeah, you'd play with like Ray Lewis, and you just
launch the hit stick, and you just bop.
Yeah, you would just absolutely lay somebody out.
And they threw a terrible flag on that.
That was so
terrible flag.
It was a textbook. It was a textbook tackle.
Yeah,
he led with the shoulder. He didn't go for the crown of the helmet, and for some reason they just felt. Because it was too, what is it?
He hit him too hard.
Yeah, he hit him too hard? Is that what we're going with now?
Yeah.
It
was not that kind of situation. But look, he had other plays. And look, he had a chance to play on the ball, too. So it's like if he turns around and he wants to make a play on the football, he could go in for an interception. But he came into that play with bad intentions.
Yeah.
He wants to hurt. He wants to hit.
His shoulders were
not physically hurt, but it's like, you know.
No, his shoulders were leaning into the player, not looking to
No. He was going to destroy.
Receive the ball.
Search and destroy.
He was looking to dislodge the ball, not catch the ball.
No.
Speaking of the football and those who catch and throw it, I feel pretty good because Easton Stick, he showed me a little something tonight. To the point where I think the only worry you could have if you're a Falcons fan about potentially moving on from Kirk Cousins is, well, who's going to be the backup then? God forbid we need somebody to step in, albeit even for a drive or for a quarter. We all remember that miraculous, Chad Henne drive for the Chiefs in the playoffs a couple of years ago. What if you need somebody just to do that? Well, Easton Stick going 15 for 18 for a buck 50 and a tutty, that looked pretty good. He was consistent. He was accurate. He had a nice deep crossing throw, and he had the touchdown to Blair. I mean, if this guy ultimately winds up having to be the backup, especially because he has previous NFL experience, I'm pretty okay with that. I mean, I want to see more, obviously, and I think we will. Garrett, if you had to make a prediction right now, do Penix and Kirk play at all this preseason?
No,
right now,
God,
I'm leaning no.
God, no.
I'm leaning no. Especially with what happened with Richardson and with the Colts. He has a dislocated finger. I'm leaning towards no. So you're going to see a lot more Easton Stick and a lot more Emory Jones.
Hey, I'm not leaning. I'm fully jumped over and fallen over into that camp. They're not playing. If they were going to play, they were going to play week one.
Tonight doesn't help.
No, tonight.
Unfortunately, no joking, but it's, you know, in all seriousness, that doesn't help.
No. And I was firmly in the camp that they weren't going to be playing anyway. I don't think it matters all that much. I know I was listening to you the other day when I was driving up to Truist Park. You were talking about it, and I don't think it matters at all. It doesn't really. I mean, you're going to get game reps against the Tennessee Titans this week. You get good scrimmage reps. I mean, you don't play preseason games in college, and they look fine. You know, I mean, like, this is just, they're professional football players. They don't need warm-up games. You can get a lot of this stuff in practice.
No, but is the whole point of the exercise that I was doing on Chris Thomas tonight, which you can catch 6 to 10 every week right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, is if the elite of the elite, if the best of the best of the best, sir, are doing it, is that a model the Falcons should just look to possibly follow? Because if that's what the best teams in the league are doing,
well, the Eagles didn't do it.
Should you emulate it?
Eagles didn't do it. Chiefs do it, notoriously.
Bengals do it.
Bengals did it for the first time this year. This is the first time they've done that. They had never done that before.
It worked out pretty well.
Maybe it does. Maybe it doesn't. It remains a mystery because we haven't seen them in week one yet.
No, but
you know, but they started last year 0-3, and they were in the bucket in the hole really early. The Falcons lost week one, and they looked bad. I will admittedly bad against the Steelers.
Well, the offense looked broken, but how much do you put on A, T.J. Watt being a game wrecker, and
sure,
B, Kirk lying about how healthy he was?
Well, I don't think that was the situation in that. I think that was just T.J. Watt establishing his presence early and often in that game.
Well, Kirk did say his ankle wasn't
It was hurting 100%. Him, of course. I mean, look, he was hurting him.
So he wasn't mobile at all. He couldn't move.
He wasn't mobile at any point. He hasn't been mobile at any point in his career. But last year...
Well, I mean, able to evade a pass
I know what you're saying. But the point, just to get back to the point, I don't think that playing preseason games last year would have made a difference whatsoever. And you can say the best of the best of the best do it. Some of them do, but not all of them. I would actually venture to say the vast majority of teams in the NFL don't play their starters at all. I mean, the Detroit Lions didn't play their starters. They were the number one seed in the NFC. The number two seed in the NFC, the Philadelphia Eagles, they also didn't play their starters. You know, so it's not uncommon. In fact, I think it's the norm. I don't think it really makes a tangible difference. It really doesn't.
Well,
the Chiefs are good because the Chiefs are good.
Well, how about the Lions, for example, though, just to play devil's advocate?
Sure.
They have a new offensive coordinator. You want to see if the offense against some live bullets has the same rhythm that it did under Ben Johnson.
What are you going to learn from two series, though? I mean,
as opposed to learning nothing if you don't play at all.
You play in scrimmages. I mean, you have scrimmages, you have joint practices. Basically, it's the same thing without the injury risk.
Well, there's still an injury.
There's always well, I have an injury risk walking down the stairs. You know, I mean, like that's I get that fact, but this is football. It's a violent sport. You can't go half-assed when you're playing football.
Well, we saw it tonight because the injury happened on a routine.
It was a routine tackle.
Yeah, it was a routine play,
and it happens. It happens, and it's not worth the risk, in my opinion. I think we're closer to seeing the NFL completely go away from the preseason games entirely than we are anything else. And I know that the ownership doesn't like that because it's gate fee and you have concessions and you have everything else and gets people in the stands, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't think it actually adds anything to the game for the most part. And I think you can get most of what you get in preseason games and practices and in scrimmages and in joint practices.
No, I agree. And I think that the joint practice thing is just the wave of the future. They'll do a week or two of those and then that'll be it.
Yeah, just add another week of doing it. And I think it adds a little fuel and a little fun flair to get people up there at Flowery Branch and having some fun that way. But I don't see the point in playing these games.
Well, the only thing that I'll say for Cousins, and maybe you heard this on my show or maybe you didn't, I just don't know what he is right now. Like, what does he look like operating an offense? I know you've seen it at Flowery Branch some, and for those who have been up there, but in live game action, because if you're going to sell another team on Kirk Cousins in terms of getting back any value for him, the other team is going to want to know what they're getting.
He's looked good. He actually has looked very good. I would actually say this is the healthiest I think I've seen him. I mean, again, like you said, his practices and it's all controlled as much as you can control. But no, he's been efficient. He's been effective. He's dropping back. I think he's running better. He's got some arm strength that I don't think he fully had last year, especially by the end of the season. He's looked good, you know, and some people have said he's outperformed Penix at times. I don't think that's true.
No.
I think he's had individual days that have been on par or better. But in totality, Michael Penix has been the starter, and I think Michael Penix will continue to be the starter.
That really got my goat, G, when I saw a couple of articles in a couple of places that were talking about this because it's irresponsible is too strong, but it's not right, in my opinion, to put that even out into the ether because you know, I know, every Falcons fan out there knows, and it shouldn't be used to ishter that no matter what happens in the preseason, there is a 0.00% chance that Kirk Cousins would start for the Falcons.
Not week one. Barring an injury to Michael Penix.
The only way, Kirk, in my opinion, and if you disagree, you can let me know. In my opinion, the only way Kirk Cousins starts a game this season is because Michael Penix gets injured. There is no other circumstance in which he starts a game.
Unless, if he comes in and he is just a shell of himself and he just is actively losing this team games or something like that.
I honestly don't
see that happening.
Unless it spirals to like a 5 or a 6 game losing streak.
But then you get to a spot where it's like you're a coaching staff who needs to save their job.
Yeah.
You know, and I think at that point you could see it, but I don't think that happens. I don't think that's realistic. And ultimately, I think this team they're very comfortable with Michael Penix. I'm very comfortable with Michael Penix. I think it unlocks a certain level of offense that you weren't really going to get with Kirk Cousins. I mean, I've said this on multiple occasions. It's like he's a gunslinger, you know. Michael's Penix is going to go out there and he's going to make these deep throws. He's going to try to take everything that he can, and it's something that, I mean, Kirk, he's a veteran quarterback. He's going to look good in camps and practices like this because he's a veteran quarterback. He's been through the ringer. He's been around for 13 years, folks. I mean, that's a very long time. There's a reason he's played as long as he has. But Michael adds another level, another layer to this team. And Zach Robinson, I mean, he can do just a little bit more, and it's going to make this offense a lot more explosive and a lot more fun.
No, I agree. All right, good stuff, G. When we get back, do we have a kicking competition? I don't know. We saw something tonight. I'll explain. Plus, our own Bo Morgan joined Mike Johnson and Grant McCauley in the postgame show to explain what it was like for him watching inside Mercedes-Benz Stadium as the events unfolded tonight. We'll let you hear that as well. 1 hour left to play, 404-726-0929. It is Chris Thomas Turtle with you on the Falcons flyover till 2 o'clock.
Lenny Krieg, the best is 52. This is 56-ish. Snap, spot, middle of the field kick by Krieg, and Lenny Krieg bangs it home. How about that? Hey, boys and girls, let me tell you, Lenny Krieg could have probably kicked that one 60.
Yeah, do we have ourselves a little kicking competition here? It is the Falcons flyover. Chris Thomas Turtle with you until the top of the hour. I would still say no. I would still say this is Young Wei Koo's job to lose, but a somewhat impressive debut because he would go on to be inaccurate on a 53-yarder a little bit later in the game. But that one, gee, that was impressive, my friend. That thing was, I mean, they said 60. It might have been 65 it would have been good from.
Yeah, no, there's an audible, like, there's a sound that comes off when he kicks a football. You know, I mean, it explodes off of his foot. Now, does that mean he's ready to be an NFL kicker? No, it does not. I don't think he is yet. He's not there yet. I think he could in future be a serviceable NFL kicker. He could be very good.
And Koo's outplayed him in camp. I mean, but, straight I mean, Koo's, up.
Koo right? has clearly outplayed him. Koo had the leg up, no pun intended, to begin camp anyway. And Koo got all the reps on Wednesday. That tells me effectively that the front office and the coaching staff says that he is the guy. And he was effective. He missed one kick, and it was an end-of-game situation. Or it was like a 60-plus yard kick. You know, and that tells me specifically that he's won the job. And I don't even know if it was even technically a kicker competition. But two guys were there. Two guys were in camp.
Well,
and
I think
Krieg
if Koo,
can stay on the roster.
I think if Koo showed signs of, you know, the injury not being 100% or something, that it could have been.
Yeah.
But he came out of the gates firing and was ready to go. So,
yeah, no, he's looked great.
Yeah, I agree that there's nothing to see there for the most part. But if they do put Krieg out there for the rest of the preseason, let's see how far he can jack.
I'd love to see him kick these long, long, long kicks. It's fun to watch him do it. It explodes off his foot. It's fun. But it's not the long kicks that I care about. It's the kicks from 20 yards, from 30 yards, from 40 yards. I need to see him consistently make those. He doesn't consistently make those yet. I think he could, in time, get better. But Young Wei Koo is, there's a reason. He was the second best kicker in the NFL by percentage, behind only Justin Tucker. You know, and that's a big deal. I mean, like, you need to be able to get up there and have faith in your kicker to make every single kick. It doesn't need to be pretty. Koo sometimes floats it all the way up there, but I don't care. It goes through the upright every single time, and that's all that matters.
Oh, you're 100% right. Speaking of all that matters, Maurice Norris, that's all that mattered tonight. His health and safety, number one, after a knee to the helmet collision that sent him off in a stretcher in the hospital. He is in a stable condition at Grady with his mom and some teammates, so that is a great update there. But Bo Morgan, our executive producer for the Falcons Radio Network and co-host of the pregame show, was on the scene, and he called in to our postgame show with Mike Johnson and Grant McCauley and discussed what he was able to see live from Mercedes-Benz Stadium, and this was that conversation.
We're going to go back out to Mercedes-Benz Stadium. We're going to be joined by a friend of ours. It is Bo Morgan. He's the executive producer of the Atlanta Falcons Radio Network. He's also a pregame host alongside my counterpart, Mike Johnson. Bo, thanks for making some time. I know this is not the circumstances and the kind of things you wanted to talk about following the Falcons preseason opener. We appreciate you making some time.
No problem, guys. Yeah, it was I was talking to Lomas Brown and obviously Arch, if we were heading to the locker room, and Lomas Brown does what Arch does for Detroit, and none of us had ever been a part of that. And those guys have been in a lot more games than I have. And right. Lomas Brown obviously played when Mike Utley in Detroit got paralyzed, and he had never even seen anything like the way the game ended. Obviously the right thing to do, mm-hmm. just a different ending than we've seen ever before.
Bo, I know you got a chance to, be down there with Dave as he's talking to Coach Morris. The emotion in Coach Morris's voice, very evident. I thought Dave and Raheem both did a good job of kind of encapsulating the situation and understanding that, you know, there's not much to talk about football-wise in a situation like that. But I think you can share a little bit of pride with me when I say I'm glad that, you know, we have a guy like that at the helm of this football team and that he and Dan Campbell were able to come to, the decision at the end to snap the football and no plays to be run throughout the remainder of the game.
Yeah, it's a really good point, Mike. You could see it all over Ra's face when he came in. It was just nothing was about football. And when he came in to see us, we have our own little room there in the locker room. It was the thing that's interesting is, you know, you said the words they got together. I missed something as you know, there was a lot going on when everything was happening, but I never saw them two actually come together and meet on the field. I did see officials going back and forth between the two coaches. Obviously, Campbell was in the middle of the field when they were working on Norris and trying to get him loaded up into the ambulance. But I never saw them come together, so it's really cool how they were able to work that out, if I may use that word for it. But we judge these guys on wins and losses a lot, and those are two of the better character coaches that this league has seen ever, especially right now as head coaches that are active.
Well, I do want to get to the football conversation in just a minute and talk about guys like Easton Stick and Dylan Drummond and Khalid Kareem. And I think those guys obviously will be talked about a lot over the next couple of weeks. But I'm curious just one more thing about the situation. What was the crowd reaction like? Because I think that was one of the things that as you watched on television or listened on the radio – couldn't quite get a sense of if the crowd even knew what was going on. And obviously a terrible situation and the crowd gets quiet and there's an ambulance on the field and all that stuff. But did everybody immediately start to file out? Like, did anybody, try to understand what was going on, from the perspective of people sitting in the stands?
Yeah. At first I don't believe that people knew the severity of when he first went down. And honestly, I didn't either. You see it and then you see signals from the trainers of the team, and that's when we noticed it was bad. But everybody stayed in their seat. And, the crazy thing is that when they snapped the ball, it almost looked like they snapped it and Emory Jones got it and they weren't ready the way everyone reacted. And I don't even know if we knew it right away. And I think they snapped the ball and you see the clock running. The Detroit TV, the local Detroit TV was there next to us, and their the spotter for them was writing notes to me saying, I think they're trying to run out the clock. But nobody really knew what was going on. There was no announcement in the stadium whatsoever. It just happened, and no one really knows. It goes for about 8 minutes, and everyone's kind of staying put. And then they Hockey League came on and said, look, the NFL, the y'all heard it, that New York has called down and suspended the game. I want to give the officials, who I'm very hard on, as Grant, you and Mike know, as friends of mine and co-hosts of ours, I'm very hard on the officials. I thought they handled this situation as well as they could.
Yeah, not an easy job for them whatsoever. He is Bo Morgan. He is the Falcons Radio Network executive producer and one half of the pregame show right here on the Atlanta Falcons Radio Network as well. He joins me, Grant McCauley, alongside Mike Johnson here in the Radio Network Studios. Bo, I did want to ask you briefly at least about the game and what you saw and what you took away from the first action for the Falcons facing an opponent thus far in 2025.
Yeah, I will start with the rookies. I know that it's not, they're not going against necessarily the first string, but they got significant action, and I saw some good things from both of them. They were crashing those ends. And, Grant, I texted Mike during the game. I said, let's go back to the second play. I believe it was in the second quarter. It was a run play. And Jalen Walker's out there on the edge, and Craig Reynolds has the ball, and he goes to pop it outside. And as he hesitates to go pop the run outside, Jalen Walker sticks his head out, Grant, and edge, right? And immediately Reynolds cut back inside. And I just thought that was one of those plays that, like, we talk about, you know, guys that play in the SEC, guys that play at schools like Georgia and Alabama and, mm-hmm. and the pedigree that they have and what they're taught with. And I was like, that was a veteran-type move. And it was really nothing more than instinct and just technique. I really liked how attacking the defense was. I know they gave up some plays. And Mike and I have been going back and forth about receivers that we want to see make plays. And his guy's been Chris Blair. And I thought Chris Blair was phenomenal on that final drive of the first half of the Falcons. And Easton Stick quietly went, I think, 15 of 18 mm-hmm. with a touchdown. Yeah. So there was a lot of little things. A couple of the running backs that were getting action, they did very – I know Dotson did well in run protection. So did Carter. I mean, excuse me, pass protection. So just little things that you see that we don't always notice as a big deal, but when you hear Raheem Morris and Terry Fontenot talk about them, they are big deals to them.
Bo, one of the follow-ups I want to have, and you mentioned Easton Stick going to 15 of 18 tonight, and really the operation at the end of the first half in that two-minute drill just could not possibly have been any better. And then the Falcons defense on the back end of that, you know, forcing the sack fumble right there that really ended the half. I think one of the things I've been wrestling with, you know, ever since the end of the first half is it a big deal? Is it a small deal? Is it a deal at all that Easton Stick was so efficient tonight? It's a good takeaway as far as Easton Stick goes, but when you talk about a third quarterback on the roster in a very, very vanilla and very bland game plan, I don't know what the biggest takeaway is from Easton Stick going 15 of 18.
Yeah, it's a good question because I'm not sure if anybody really knows, but if I can project for a second, it's not really, you know, something we do a lot of on the network, but you project and you never know what else is going to happen in the league if someone decides that they don't like what they have at quarterback and they want to inquire about a Kirk Cousins. Is Easton Stick a guy who has gotten NFL action, yep. played in, I believe, with the Chargers in some regular season games? Did you see enough that if someone was to come and ask about Kirk Cousins, that you think you could plug him in? If not, he's pretty good with his legs. I'm not saying he can maybe make the practice squad when it's all said and done. If you don't want to keep three quarterbacks, whatever your preference is, and maybe he can simulate some guys like, again, I know he's not Jaden Daniels, but he could simulate some of that stuff for you. So it's something to think about that maybe he secure at least, worst-case scenario, a practice squad spot.
Well, we appreciate you making some time to join us. He is Bo Morgan. He's the executive producer of the Falcons Radio Network, also one half of the pregame hosting duo that debuted in this preseason opener as well. Bo, great to talk to you. Looking forward to a great season of Falcons football.
Good stuff there from our boy Squidbilly, giving a live on-the-scene report from Mercedes-Benz Stadium. All right, when we get back, what did I not see tonight that I want to see more of in the preseason game too? I'm sure G has some things as well, including why couldn't we run the ball tonight? What was that all about? We'll talk about that and more as we continue on the Falcons flyover. It is Chris Thomas Turtle with you till 2 o'clock.
Here is Stick in the gun. Detroit bringing five. He'll loop for Blair. Caught it! Touchdown Atlanta! And a flag's thrown. How about Chris Blair?
Now, Chris Blair, Dylan Drummond, David Sills, there were a bunch of guys that made some plays tonight that I really enjoyed seeing. The question is, now that we've covered all the good, what is there left on the table? There's plenty of meat on the bone for the Falcons to try and get the most out of in these next two preseason games. One of the things I don't understand is the following. Why couldn't they run the ball tonight? Why didn't they run the ball tonight? What was the game plan behind that? And Garrett, let me see if you find this interesting too, because I find this very interesting. And maybe we would have gotten an answer from Raheem if it was a more traditional evening, but unfortunately, questions about football were just not on the cards tonight. Why didn't Carlos Washington play tonight? I thought he was the lead candidate to be the third back. Is he not?
I think that's because he is the lead candidate to be the third back.
But you're not going to play your third string running back in the preseason? Why not?
I guess not.
Just to see him, like, at all? And the other thing, too, Braylon Trice didn't play in this game. Is he?
That is more surprising.
Is he too big for the preseason? The guy who missed his entire rookie season?
That's going to be a question that's going to be asked when we get to training camp next week, or when we get to Flowery Branch.
Well,
that's absolutely going to be a question that pops
up.
Well,
let me ask you this, since you will have a better perspective, because I have not been personally. How has he looked in camp?
I can't disclose publicly everything that you see up there, just based off of injuries and things like that. That's just one of the agreements that we have with the Falcons.
No. I know.
I'm just setting the table for everybody out there who's listening at home. He's looked good when he plays. I mean, he has a specific role, but he was also somebody who was drafted for a Jimmy Lick defense, and they need bigger, beefier guys on the edge just because they don't really have run stuffers on the outside. So he's going to have a role of some kind. It's just, it remains to be seen. He hasn't been fully involved in team drills. He's been, he has not been in those team drills. Let's just put it that way. So maybe this could be just a preventative type thing. Maybe this is more injury related than it is performance related. I doubt it's something where he's going to be at risk of missing the 53 man roster. I don't think it's that situation, but I would be surprised if he doesn't get extended run when the Titans come to Atlanta.
Well, he needs it, right? I mean, at the end
of
the day,
he absolutely needs it. He's been about a year. It's been right at a year since he had the injury. He needs reps. He's a rookie this year. That's basically what he is. I mean, he's not technically a rookie, but he is. He hasn't played a single game.
Another really fascinating one. Casey Washington didn't play tonight. Why? I don't understand. Like, is Casey Washington so good that he's not ready to play in the preseason? Here's Taren Walk, our good friend from AtlantaFalcons.com, who joins me on Chris Thomas Tonight often. Falcons players who weren't seen dressed for the preseason. Diablo, fine. Mooney, Bates, Hodge, London, Koo, Robinson, Pitts, Penix, Cousins, Hughes, Clark Phillips is the first player I'll stop at there. Is he not battling essentially for a roster spot?
He got banged up at one point during the scrimmage.
Okay.
And he left the field.
Okay. So this is injury maintenance. Okay. AJ Terrell, Tyler Allgeier, fine. Again, Casey, what is he hurt? Did I miss something there? I don't think he's hurt, right? Ray McLeod, fine. Taylor, fine. Bertrand, we know about him. I don't even know who Verdon is. Who is Verdon? I don't even know who that is. V-E-R-D-O-N, is he a backup lineman? Troy Anderson, we know about him. Cade Nellis, Floyd Lindstrom, Nuziel, and the rest are all starters. So, but there's a couple of names in there that I'm like, why didn't these guys get run? Let me ask you this, G, because they haven't really in the past, and they let go of Jace McClellan. Do you even think they keep three running backs on the roster?
They have to keep three running backs on the roster. It's malpractice if they keep fewer than three.
Well, they would just have multiple on the practice squad, potentially.
No, you're keeping three running backs.
Because Jace McClellan isn't here anymore. They let him go.
Yeah. So Carlos Washington's your third running back. It's that simple. I mean, everybody else that you've seen, those are your practice squad guys. I think it's that simple, personally. But they're going to keep three running backs. You have to. And Washington can come out and he can do things in special teams as well. So he's got other roles that he can play. But he's not going to be a super active participant, I guess, in the down-to-down basis, I guess you could say. But there's no situation, in my opinion, that they would carry any fewer than three.
What about wide receivers? You think it's six?
Five is probably more realistic. It just depends on what they do with Jamal Agnew.
Well, he didn't play tonight either.
He's your primary punt return, kick return guy. But that's all he does. I haven't seen him at all, really, in team drills. And when you get into 11-on-11, and then when you got into the scrimmage, he didn't appear at all. And all he does is punt return and kick return. And I think the question that the the staff up at Flowery Branch is going to have to ask themselves is how valuable is that to your roster? Because you have a guy in Ray McLeod who can do it. D. Alford lined up, I believe, in some of those drills in punt return and kick return. I mean, Casey Washington can jump in there and do it to some degree. How valuable is that roster spot to you? Because Kadarryl Hodge is an all-pro level special teams player, right? He's really good, but he's not also going to give you, he gives you a little run at wide receiver. You saw he had the big play last year, I believe against Tampa Bay, but it's like, I mean, how many special teams savants can you have on your roster that all they do is special teams? You know, you have to have that wide receiver room's already thin. It's very thin. And you need a lot of versatility in that room to kind of make things worth it. Because if you lose Darnell Mooney for an extended period of time, your next guy is probably Casey Washington. He's taken almost all of the reps with the ones at Flowery this summer. And
well, it seems like Ray Ray McLeod and Penix have a good, you know.
Yeah, Ray runs in the F position, and it's like then you're going to have to replace him in the flanker spot.
Well, my problem with the receiver room is just outside of London, they are small. I mean, really small.
Mooney's skinny, but he's not really small necessarily.
Mooney's not a tall. He's
not big.
He's not.
He's like 6'1".
I don't think he's 6'1". I don't think so. Darnell Mooney, I don't think he's 6'1". I think he's shorter than that. I think you need another guy. Like, for me.
5'11". Yeah, he's 5'11".
Yeah, you
right.
Need a guy who is like, you know, Chris Blair to me. Could be that dude's 6'2", 215.
But that's your fifth or sixth receiver right there. I think Casey Washington is firmly entrenched himself as a person player who's going to be on this roster when it's all said and done. I think David Sills is probably the person who I would say over Chris Blair. David Sills has been very active.
Let's see how
he's
big.
He's like 6'3".
Oh, he's 6'. Yeah,
he's your prototype to replace Drake London if, God forbid, something happened to your number one. But no, I mean, Zach Robinson also comes from the school of Sean McVay, where
all they do
is play their starters.
Dylan Drummond made a case for himself tonight.
He had a good game, but I think he's still on the outside looking in.
Yeah, and he's 6', 200 pounds.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm not making all my decisions on that. I know what you're saying, just based off of making exceptions for people. If you make exceptions for players who are small, then all of a sudden you're going to turn around and your entire roster's small. I don't think that they're in that sort of spot yet. I think Drake London and Kyle Pitts and guys like that can still make up for a lot of the size deficiencies that a Ray McLeod might have. And Darnell Mooney plays bigger. He also plays down the field. So you're not asking him to go get jump balls necessarily in the same way that you're going to ask Kyle Pitts or Drake
London.
Well,
you know what's funny you bring that up? You know what I think is going to wind up happening? If this Pitts experiment fails and it still is not working up to where it should be, you know who's going to get those targets? Bijan.
Yeah, and that's also a very good point. I mean, and Pitts is going to line up and play at the X. He has to, and that tells me that you're going to keep five wide receivers. It's probably going to be Drake London, Darnell Mooney, it's Ray McLeod, Kadarryl Hodge, and then Casey Washington. Those are probably going to be your five, and if you keep a six, it's going to be David Sills. But I think that and Jamal Agnew, you also have to include him in that category too. So I do think that, now that I'm talking myself into six, but you're going to have to make a subtraction somewhere else.
And hasn't Pitts been lining up with the wide receivers some?
He's listed as a tight end in the depth chart. So
right. That's
what he's going to be included as. So I wouldn't include him in the wide receivers, no.
So how then,
he may line up as a wide receiver.
Then the question is, how much true 12 personnel do we see?
It's not technically 12 personnel because he's going to be lining up with wide receivers, but he's not going to line up in line. I doubt you see
if Warner does.
Warner will be out there on most plays, I believe. I think so. He will be. So, and Kyle's probably going to be one of those guys who lines up as a wide receiver. He just won't be classified as one. He's more of like a gadget type of player.
But I think he's going to be primarily used as the safety blanket for Pitts or for Penix. And if that doesn't work, I think you could see Bijan Robinson have 65, 70 catches this year.
Yeah, that actually would not surprise me at all. He may do that anyway.
He's
your best player.
Anyway, but
yeah.
I don't want him having a Saquon Barkley type load, though.
I don't need him to touch the ball 350, 400 times.
No, and like, he came close. Last year,
he touched the ball a lot. And I saw, I think Carl Duke said this or something like that. And it's like, I need him to touch the ball more. No, I don't need him to touch the ball more. I absolutely don't want him to touch the ball more. That is not good. I need him to be more explosive. That's what I need him to be.
Well, he's come out and said he learned from his rookie year when he slowed down a little bit at the end because he was pushing on the gas a little too hard.
Yeah, and that's part of just your development and growth as an NFLer. You know, and that's just the way it goes. You know, I mean, like, you learn a lot and you develop and you get better. And look, if we've seen the floor of Bijan Robinson, that's a pretty damn good floor. And I think he's shown that he's fully capable of handling a big load if he needs to. But I mean, that's why having a guy like Tyler Allgeier is so valuable. You know, yeah. and
this
it might
be
upset
your last
fantasy
year.
Football owners, but
and this may be your last year to have him. It probably will be.
Likely.
I don't see how they're going to be. They have some tough decisions coming up, man. We'll get into that later on in the season. But they have a lot of tough decisions to make about personnel, especially on offense.
Including Drake London.
Well, I don't think that's a tough decision.
But it's going to be an expensive one.
He's going to probably set the market.
Yeah, and that's the situation you're going to be in. And so I would be surprised. I would be very surprised if they get out of camp and Drake London doesn't have a contract.
I haven't heard anything, though. I don't know. Maybe you've heard some stuff behind the scenes. I haven't heard anything about him being unhappy.
No, nothing to insinuate anything other than that he is perfectly happy and content in his situation with the Atlanta Falcons. I think that the Falcons will want to sign him to get ahead of the market. As best they can.
I think it's too late.
Well, I mean, it is. It absolutely is. I mean, you're probably going to end up paying him somewhere in the range of $30 million.
Yeah. That's what Terry McLaurin's going to want.
And that's probably what you're going to have to pay him. But the thing is, he's a lot younger than Terry McLaurin is. I think he's got 4 years on Terry McLaurin in the younger category. Terry's old as hell. He's 30, and
he's productive, man.
Oh, he's very good.
He gets a ton.
Yeah, but they also have Debo Samuel on that roster, and that's going to make things just a little bit more complicated up there in Washington. But no, I mean, you've got to pay Drake. He's an extremely important part of this machine here, and he's been nothing but consistent. You know, so you got to reward that, and I think they will.
All right, coming up next, I had a chance to catch up with Allison Mastrangelo of WSB. TV, what did she have to tell me about everything that went down tonight? And we'll also wrap up shop and get you ready for Titans and Falcons coming up a week from tonight. It is the Falcons Flyover with Chris Thomas on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Back with you here on the Falcons Flyover. It is Chris Thomas Turtle with you until 2 o'clock this morning. We are reacting to, of course, the first preseason game. It's in the books, but certainly not in the conventional sense by any stretch of the imagination. We will get to your calls coming up in about 15 minutes. Just hang tight. I do want to hear your reaction from Falcons fans about what you saw. There was a lot of positives to take away, but right now we need to head out to the WadeFord.com hotline. Welcome in our good friend Allison Mastrangelo. Check her out at WSB-TV. To recap the events at Mercedes-Benz Stadium tonight. Allison, obviously a horrific scene, but the Lions did provide an update just a couple minutes ago that Maurice Norris is in stable condition, has feeling and movement in all his extremities. He will remain at Grady Hospital in Atlanta overnight for observation. So with that said, good news in hand, but what was it like at the stadium when the injury first occurred? Did you and everybody else around you even realize the severity of the situation at first?
Not at first. I mean, you saw him go down and then, you know, you kind of look to follow the ball. I didn't really see it until, you know, everyone was around him. And then we started to see the replays on the TV. And then, of course, when the ambulance came out in the field and the players got together, that's when you knew something awful was happening. And it's such a scary moment for everyone there. And I think at the first there was kind of some confusion because we didn't know what was happening, then if the game was still going to be played. But it was such a powerful moment when you saw, you know, the teams get together and pray on the field. It's unlike anything I've ever seen before.
Yeah, and I think one of the telltales was, unfortunately, it was a procedure to get him in the way that he needed to be transported out of the stadium. Allison, we cover games. We know injuries are an unfortunate part of it, but for just the length of time that the broadcast had to be paused to get the situation sorted out where he was able to be transported out of the stadium was just added a jarring situation to the entire matter.
Yeah, and then, you know, I think it was interesting, you know, we did see briefly, like, Dan Campbell and head coach Raheem Morris talk on the field afterwards, and then they kind of went to their sides, and then, you know, both teams came back on the field. It looked like they were going to play again. Then the Falcons snapped the ball, and then there was some confusion because they no one was moving. They thought maybe there was something wrong with the clock or something like that, and then you're noticing, like, minutes. I think it was almost like, you know, they had 14:50 left, and then almost like 7 or 8 minutes went by until finally the NFL came out and suspended the game. You know, after the game, we were in the locker room talking with the guys. No one would for sure say, like, who made that decision? Was it Raheem? Was it Dan Campbell? Pretty much all we're being told is, like, that decision was made on the field, and you can take, you know, what you want from that, that that was kind of decided between the teams that they didn't want to play. And every player I spoke with, whether it was DeMarco Helens or Easton Stick, you know, all of them said 100% that that was the right call. Like, they just needed to be with, you know, they needed to pray, and they needed to all get back together and focus on what was really important. And that was, of course, Norris and, you know, the major accident that he went through on the field. No one at all, none of the players felt like they needed to play, and they didn't. And I think, you know, that was the right call. At the end of the day, it's a preseason game. It's safety. It's life. All of that is so much more important than a game that doesn't even, you know, count for the record books or anything like that. So, you know, interesting, because I think that's the first time I have ever seen players, teams kind of make that decision, you know, on their own. But at the end of the day, it's player safety is the most important thing, right? And they wanted to make sure that was known.
Well, the other interesting thing about it was Raheem Morris. I know when he spoke with our very own Dave Archer, he didn't want to talk about football at all. When he met with the assembled media, he didn't want to talk about football at all. So not only was that approach taken on the field, but then, Allison, as you said, it was continued on by Raheem Morris leading the charge on the Falcons side, Dan Campbell on the Lions side, of making sure that the messaging was all about what it needed to be and not about the game that took place.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that was probably the shortest press conference of Raheem Morris. I think it was like almost 4 minutes long, and he just wanted to focus on, you know, like you said, what happened, and kind of just talking about, like, briefly, you know, getting the guys together and things like that. He didn't want to talk about the game at all. I do know a reporter from Detroit shared with me that Dan Campbell did say that he had a lot of respect for Raheem Morris. And so I think that can lead you on to believe that they had a great conversation about what, you know, they talked about, and he called him a class act as well. And so, you know, I think that that's very important. Between, there's a lot of respect, I think, with how the situation was handled between both teams when they, you know, I guess mutually decided not to play. It's unlike anything. I think, like you said, you know, there was confusion before when we were watching it, but, you know, to see them stand up for themselves and for a teammate, whether it's all, no matter what team you're playing for, it all comes down to taking care of one another. I did also see that the Lions locker room was not open for post afterwards, which is understandable, of course. And, you know, we're all just praying for Norris, and now, like you said, there's some positive news at least, but, you know, really just puts things into perspective when you see something like that so scary and sudden happen on the field.
How powerful was it, the image inside the stadium when the players all gathered around each other as the time was expiring on the field, and like you said, an unprecedented showcase of brotherhood and integrity, and, you know, this means more than any individual game. It was shocking to see on TV. How was it inside the building?
Yeah, I mean, it really was kind of silent, right? I think, you know, because everyone was trying to take in what was happening. But then there were also, like, some cheers from the fans when they started to realize what was happening. Like, oh, they're doing this. There was some clapping and things like that. Like, they respected what they were doing. There wasn't, like, you know, any, like, booing or anything, or upset that, like, the game was over early. Like, there was, you know, none of that at all, which was really great to see. And it was just really powerful. I mean, you see, like you said, you just see these grown men together on the field, all coming together. And I think it was really powerful to see when the ambulance came out and, like, all the Lions players were running onto the field. you know, wanting to see, you know, Norris and pray with him and everything before he was gone. You know, and I just also, you know, you feel for Nathan Carter, you know, with the Falcons. Like, obviously, it was an accident. It was nothing that, you know, it was just on a play, right? And that's football, and things happen like that. And so, you know, you feel with him, but, you know, it was just a football play. It wasn't anything dirty or illegal or anything like that. It just happened. And so, you know, you're praying for everyone. And I also saw that, you know, Norris's mom is able to be with him at the hospital. So that must mean that she was here at the game, you know, watching him. So she wants to be with him. I also saw, you know, some reports that some of his teammates wanted to stay back with him, as well. They didn't want to fly back. So, you know, just a really great sign of, you know, at the end of the day, what's it all about? Football is a game, but life is way more important.
Yeah, exactly. As we're talking with Allison Mastrangelo, WSB TV, she was inside Mercedes-Benz Stadium tonight for the events that unfolded with, you know, the tragic scene there that ultimately, as we said, though, Allison, it seems like, you know, about as good of an update as we can get that we're going to have moving forward. You know, and the only thing you can do if you're a Falcons fan is just wish them the best. And I did hear on the broadcast that as he was leaving in the ambulance that he was given a round of applause and a standing ovation. So I think the ultimate takeaway here, Allison, is I think everybody involved, from the fans to the coaches to the players to everybody else that was there tonight, did about as good of a job as they could have done given the circumstances.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think, like, all of us are human beings, and at the end of the day, when something major like that happens and scary like that happens, it's hard to get it out of your head. I mean, I was even like, how, you know, I saw them get back on the field. I was like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe they're going back out on the field and can play after that. Like, I know it's football and they talk about injuries, but something like that, I don't care who you are, it's scary to see. And then imagine being one of the players. You just saw one of your teammates get carted off the field, and now you got to go play in a game that doesn't even matter or count. I mean, even if it did, it's like hard to even imagine, you know, that they would have played that after, you know, the scenes unfolded. So, you know, not like every single person, you know, and player in that, on that Falcons team, 100% agreed that that was the right thing to do, and that it was more about Norris and praying for him and everyone else than, and then playing that game. And it's, you know, it's unlike anything we've ever seen before, and hopefully we never have to see it again. But if, you know, this happens, maybe this is a trend now, you know, that we see, instead of having to like push through something like that. It's like, maybe, all right, let's think about the mental health and the physical health of our players and athletes. Can we go back out there and ask them to put their bodies on the line mentally? Can they do that after they just saw one of their own teammates go down? Like, yeah, I know it's part of the game, but also it's really a hard part of the game, right? That can mess with you. So 100% the right call. Overall, even in my opinion, I thought that was the right call, because I was kind of like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they're going to play. And so hopefully we just keep getting more positive updates on Norris, and, you know, the Falcons can get a nice weekend off, and then they'll get ready for, you know, joint practices coming up against the Titans next week.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to those immensely. All right, before I get you out of here, one positive note. I'm going to assume that before this happened, the crowd was pretty into it, given what the defense was able to do.
Yeah, no, I think they, I mean, obviously the defense was the winner of the game. I think DeMarco Helms was also very impressive. He goes by the name Bam Bam, and he definitely showed up and showed out, making some big plays, even though he got a flag or whatever, not a flag, it shouldn't have been a flag, on that one tackle. And I also think, you know, it was nice that we got to see Jalen and James Pierce out there. They were really trying to shut down Pierce, though. I think at times they had double coverage on him. But Jalen was also trying to get out there. So, I mean, they talked about it in the broadcast, that they talked about how this defense, you know, ball is life, and they want to get after the ball. And you also see it. To me, the defense almost looks like a hockey lineup. Like, they're making changes kind of quick, like first down, second. Like, they're not keeping the same guys out. They're rotating them pretty quickly. So this is what you want to see, some life in that defense, something we haven't seen, I feel like, consistently in a long time. And imagine that wasn't even all the veteran guys out there, so to get to see them all out there. So something positive for sure. And hopefully, you know, DeMarco can build off of that and just stay, you know, healthy for the rest of the season, because he certainly needs it and he certainly wants it, because he talked about after the game, you know, briefly, just how great it felt for him personally to be out there, especially with how things ended last year with his season-ending injury. So positive things to take away for sure. Other than that, you know, you can't really break down too much of the other stuff, because, you know, the run game struggled and things like that. But I mean, consistently, you don't have your starters out there and all that stuff. So I'm not going to get too crazy over that kind of stuff. But definitely the bright spot was the defense. Even my dog Lexi agrees, I guess, with that as well.
Well, we'll be checking Lexi and her sister, correct, out on Instagram and Twitter and the like. And we'll be checking you out on WSB TV. Appreciate the time. Appreciate you staying up. And next time we'll be talking about all positive Falcon stuff. Really appreciate Allison's perspective there coming on and talking about everything that happened tonight. Well, G, wrapping up the first edition of the Flyover for this season. Certainly a unique one, certainly one that I'll never forget. But we're just really, really glad that Norris is going to be okay and that, you know, hopefully he comes back and he has a really long, successful playing career. But just the fact that he's going to stay overnight at Grady Hospital and his mom is there, teammates are there, and he's talking and breathing and all of those vital things that are important after an injury situation like that occurs on the field, it's the best possible outcome for everybody involved. And again, just want to take my last second here and just commend the Falcons, the Lions, the trainers, the coaches, the fans, the players, everybody that was there tonight. I thought everybody did a phenomenal job given the situation. And I look forward next time I'm on with y'all talking more football, more actual football. Of course, we did talk some tonight, but I'm going to be really excited to recap the scrimmages with the Titans and then talk about the preseason game coming up a week from tonight. Big thanks to G, who will be with me this season. Eric Slaughter and Sonny Roberts will be along the way as well behind the glass. But I'll be with you each and every game day here on the Falcons Flyover. I am excited to chat with y'all this season. It's Chris Thomas Turtle hanging out with you on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.